Welcome to the Board Game Workshop. I'm your host, Chris Anderson. This is part two of the NunPub recording. So if you haven't listened to part one, you can go back to episode 91, where we start this whole thing off. In this part, Jeff, Carla, and Andrea joined us and talk more about experience of NunPub and just kind of get into playtesting in general and community building. It's a really interesting episode. Also, round three judging for the Board Game Workshop Design Contest has begun. You head over to theboardgameworkshop.com and go into the design contest section. You can find the round three page, which will have the links to the tabletop simulator versions of the four finalists that decided to enter the digital portion. And anyone is welcome to set up their own game, play that, fill out the judge form, and be a judge for that. Also, the in-person games, I'll be sending those around. They're currently with a judge now, so that's a slower process since we got to spread it out and send them to different groups. So especially if you're in the southeastern New England area, get in touch with me if you have a group together and would like to get one or more of the finalist games to play and judge. Hopefully I'll have part three of this ready sooner than it took to get part two ready, but we shall see. All right, enjoy the episode. And Carly, you showed up just in time, so the show is not over.
Yay, I guess. I'm here.
So Carla, welcome. How was your NunPub experience, this first NunPub?
I would say that this is the best NunPub ever, but I don't go...
top three, at least.
Say, like, this is, yeah, top three. But it's my best online convention experience ever. I haven't had like great experiences going to the other online conventions. Well, most of them I've just been like, hey, am I really even going to go to this? Like, are things going to happen that I'm interested in? And usually I just skip them. So I did go to this one and I had a lot of fun.
Awesome. So actually, you bring a unique perspective because you had a panel, and I don't believe anyone else here had to actually be on a panel, right?
I did, but yeah.
Well, you didn't talk about it,
has I was on three.
Yeah, Carla was busy.
So how was the panel experience without, because it's so very different than in person?
Better because, I guess like the weird, what I was going to say is nobody can see that I'm wearing like a sports shorts or whatever I wear. I now wear like men's shorts all the time because nobody can see below the table. So it's super comfy. Women's shorts are not as comfy as men's shorts. Just putting that out there.
That's a fact.
It's good to know.
Mm-hmm. If anyone was considering to go across the line. Well, and they have pockets. Not that I like super need them since I don't leave the house, but it's nice just to have the option of pockets.
I need a pocket for my phone, even if I'm just staying in the house. I'll lose it otherwise.
Yeah. Well, you're trying to carry.
I mean, I just have it on the table.
And your coffee and your phone, yeah.
You got a cat in one hand and your phone in the other. You're gonna drop something.
So I was actually on three different panels. Well, yeah, three. Yeah. And I also did speed dating. I kind of see that as a panel because I kind of have to be entertaining or something for like 2 hours. But speed dating is actually harder than a panel. But the panels I was on designing board games and creating content because I create content now. It's a thing. That's what I was actually doing right now. I was doing a live chat, and then I immediately came to do this because I hate my mental state or something.
I know
it's
the feeling.
Fine. I'll just have a rest day tomorrow. And then I did the F2020 panel. I had to stop myself because we said the word that I probably shouldn't say on this podcast a lot during it. But that one was super fun. I got to complain a lot and say things I mean, 2020 hasn't been great for anyone, but I've learned a lot of things in 2020. For instance, I learned that you could be just on your phone playing a game and it can burst into flames. Phone literally starts smoking. That happened one day. Also, while driving, the alternator literally fell off the car. In addition to, all the COVID happened and politics and like all the board game nonsense.
So you were the perfect person to be on the F2020 panel.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Like random stupid stuff happens to me. But like at the end of the day, like right now what I have is you can always go to a park and if you're good at things, you can pet the ducks and have them eat out of your hand. So that's what I do to make up for the fact that I can't interact with humans.
Ducks are better anyway.
I mean, they're fluffy. As long, well, you don't choose the dirty ducks to pet. You choose the ones that like groom themselves. Like you could always choose which duck, unless you're like a really newbie to this and you can't attract the ducks. The trick is like the peanut butter food. They love that.
I had no idea ducks ate peanut butter.
Well, I don't know what it is. It's like there's a thing in my park where it's like. Duck food, it benefits the park to pay for it, but also they're like, oh yeah, this contains peanuts. So, I mean, who wouldn't want random peanut butter food from strangers if you're a duck?
Makes perfect sense.
Someone's just listening to this and they're like, that's a good board game idea. Writing everything down.
Well, to deal with all the things that are happening in board games, go feed ducks and also make more games about birds because that is definitely a thing that we need more. Like I've been doing my best to make more games about birds. I have like 6 or 7 of them, but like everyone else needs to pull their weight. This needs to be a section in the board game store. There's the space games, there's the fantasy games, and then there's the bird games.
I mean, it seems to be getting there.
Yeah, I play tested a bird game here this weekend, so there's hope.
I know by 2025 birds are the new zombies.
So one thing that did happen in 2020 that involved birds that wasn't me is that in Australia, the hawks have learned how to hunt with fire, where they go and they start fires so that like the animals run and they get eaten.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
But, you know, but go Australia, nature.
It was already. Yeah. Everyone can learn to adapt. I guess, except for the koalas, which just die. But anyway, I was on another panel, or I guess it was the speed pitching thing? Feedback frenzy. So I did 3.
Yeah, it was kind of like like you would give feedback to the designers last night, right?
And that's the one that started at NonPub, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's always every year at NonPub. So we wanted, that was kind of like Debbie Moynihan from White Wizard was planning to do it for Origins anyway, and then Ben was like, well, it's something we normally do, so perfect, let's just make it one of the panels. Done.
Mm-hmm. So this is the third time I've done this in, like, 2 months?
Oh, really?
I think. Oh, maybe the third time in, like, a month. days are hard. It's COVID. Because I did... Debbie ran the one that was at Gen Con also. And then... So I have a Discord, the Weird Raptor Discord, where we talk about games and stuff. And we have live chats. And I was... I told them that, hey, I'm doing this. And everyone was, like, really excited and was like, hey, I'd love to participate in something like that. So I've started doing it the second Sunday of every month, where we just I get a bunch of publishers and we give feedback to designers doing pitches. So yeah, 3 times this month, just coincidentally.
So what's the process like for that, especially online?
I think it's really cool. Well, the process for like setting it all up is like all Google Sheets. Like I just tell designers to get ready and, you know, put in their game, their sell sheet, etc., so that the publishers can look at it. But the designers, they have 3 minutes to pitch their game, and then the publishers have 3 minutes to give feedback on really any aspect of it. Like, one of the main things is a way to practice their pitching. Because, like, well, with the whole COVID, like, you're not doing as much pitching in person. And so learning how to pitch your game online is very different. Like, you have to learn how to like manipulate Tabletop Simulator or have another camera or like be able to talk with your other camera and like talk and move things in the best way. Like, or do you get a PowerPoint? Like, each person has their own thing that they like to do. And like just to see what works and like what doesn't is very interesting.
Is there still an audience for it? Because I know the in-person one has an audience, right?
Well, yeah. So I normally stream to Facebook and Twitch and such, so like you can get the comments going. And the same thing happened for this, where there was all the Twitch comments. And actually, like, I really enjoy having the Twitch commenters there, because so I've been working on computers, like, I don't know, a long time, and I know how to type. Well, I say that in a weird way. I can type and think and talk at the same time, which not a lot of people can do. So I can like keep up with the Twitch comments, except for sometimes when they say like really funny things and you see my face react in a weird way to a pitch. that's what I'm reading a Twitch comment.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
Probably hilarious. but yeah, keeping up with the Twitch like audience while at the same time giving feedback and hearing what the other publishers say is like just super interesting, because each person has a different take on the game, especially if you get like a variety of publishers. Like one of the games, it was Danielle Reynolds. She did a game about recycling, and my opinion was, I was like, hey, recycling is really boring. But Julie from Greenbrier Games, she was like, oh yeah, I'm super into this recycling theme. So just like seeing the different publisher takes on that as well.
And I noticed Jeff hopped into the channel. Jeff, welcome.
Oh, hey, Chris. I'm happy to be here. Just wrapped up a couple of playtest sessions with a couple of designers at NunPub.
So Jeff, how has your NunPub experience been so far?
I've been to one official UnPub, and it was great about 4 years ago. I think we're all like, you know, what expectations do we have for, you know, these online events as they kind of grow? So I came in with, you know, pretty low expectations, just, you know, and I found there were some really great panels. I think Carla, I was listening in at least to one of your panels. Maybe not the F2020 one, but the one earlier than that. The playtesters were light, so we designers wound up, you know, maybe you know, kind of, you know, gathering forces and playtesting each other's games. So I made some new friends and got some great inputs on my games. So, you know, it was a fun weekend for me. And the last thing was, I don't know, I did take advantage of the fact that since I was attending from home, you know, I could, you know, break out and, you know, do some family things too. Didn't have to abandon the whole clan for, you know, three or four days. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think we'll, you know, I've got some comments on things they might think about, you know, deconflicting some of the programming and stuff, but very, very happy. How was yours, Chris?
It's been busy. I've been doing a lot more stuff at home than for NunPub, sadly. But that's one of the downsides to still being at home. Like you said, you can still do stuff with the family. But I'm still doing all my chores and taking care of the house and the cats and still working on Friday and stuff. So when I'm away at a hotel, I am forced to stop all of that. And that's nice in some ways. But it does give you more freedom to do more things that you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, I was in the reserved table session, so I'd reserved the table for 4 hours, and there was just no one around yet. I think it was the Saturday 11, and so I had my phone, so I just I had the rake. I was in the yard, just waiting for someone to join the chat room, and you just can't do that when you're in a hotel conference room. You know, move bark mulch around your yard.
I mean, for your games, you probably could, though.
Okay. All right. Possibly. But, you know, I'll have to work that component in. Okay.
You already got the rake.
That's true.
Oh, one thing I did like to go forward on the whole, like, why being online is better. Like, usually, like, I have to, like, decompress, like, in my hotel room, like, in a non-ideal manner. But, like, since I was home, I could just decompress by playing like an hour of video games. So that was really nice.
Yeah, definitely a lot more freedom to get away from it. But I was going to say, we're already over an hour of recording for Brian and Heather. If either of you have to step out, I mean, you're welcome to stay. Don't leave. You don't have to. But I don't want to hold you here too long since you've already been on for a while.
No problem. I'm just doing other stuff while I was hanging out. But thank you. Thanks for attending, everybody. And yeah, we're going to be sending a survey out, actually, to all of the attendees. So Jeff and Carla and Ryan and Chris, obviously, we want to hear your thoughts so we can make this better for the next time.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for coming on the show.
I'm going to head out.
Yes,
thank you. Bye.
Yeah, had a great time. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, Chris, I did try to join at 2:30-ish, or I guess when I don't know. But so if this is the end of the podcast.
We can keep going if you guys want to keep talking. The podcast will go as long as we have stuff to talk about, just like in person.
Yeah, we usually make like 3 or 4 podcasts out of it.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, okay.
Usually there's food involved, though, and it's more fun when we're in person. But we do what we can.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I definitely, I much prefer the in-person conventions because I've just gotten, a lot more exhausted with the, online conventions. I've been doing Tabletop Simulator and, I finally, gave in to it, a few months ago because I've always, just hated Tabletop Simulator for a variety of reasons that I could rant about for hours about their different coding choices.
I do have the time. Yeah.
But that could be a different one.
It could be.
Too, where I just rant about things. Playing different games and, having, the whole, not... When I'm at Unpub, what I do is I just look around and I can see, what games look like and, the table presence can draw me in or, the person or something like that. But I didn't do, a lot of actual playtesting this round. Because I get... I'd always have, a break after a panel and I did a number of those. But, I never knew, what kinds of games I would be getting into, or how long they would be. I don't really want to play a 2-hour game on Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah.
That's just where I am with it. I do not want to do that. In person, fine. A 2-hour game, I can do that. But with the fact that I had to do, panels at a certain time, et cetera, and just, joining a group, I would actually instead just message the designers to message me when they're free and then just go and do something else or chat at people until that happened, which meant that I played a lot less games than I normally do at an in-person convention.
Yeah, Heather was mentioning earlier before you both came on how the in-person Unpub, she gets energized by it. And at 12:30 at night, you're up playing party games with everyone and still going. But when you're home, 12:30 at night, well, I'm going to bed. It's late. You don't get that energy that you get from being in the crowd, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I don't know if... Well, I went to bed as soon as, all my panels were done because for some reason I got put on, the late night panels. But yeah, I definitely agree. Or, I would, at Unpub, I just get up and I play games, consistently. And, the time between games is, 5 minutes. But, here it was, I had, hours in between games just because I didn't know, what kinds of games they were or, who was running them or, really. I didn't want to just be in the voice channel just talking and waiting for forever. That didn't seem like the thing I should be doing right then. So I didn't. Which meant that I didn't get put into games as much.
Yeah, it's much more of a process.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing that's missing is the hey, what's going on over there factor, right? You know, like the people gathering around that social game and you're just kind of drawn over to see what's going on. There's really, you know, not a way to, well, there is a lot of people at table A in the game, but do you really want to join into the TTS session to see why they're all there?
Ryan was talking earlier.
Get over that.
He was mentioning how some people have their TTS set up to stream. So it does give kind of that effect that you can look at what's going over on that table just by checking out the stream. But not everyone knows how to set that up. Not everyone knows to look. Not everyone can look depending on how you're watching things. So it is, it's limited, but it's hard to get that same feel.
My daughter, participated in a research convention. She was presenting her research poster, and they used an application called Gather.town, and it really sort of did a good job of like simulating at least like an exhibitor hall.
Yeah.
And so you kind of had, it was a 2D view. You had a little avatar. You would wander around to different booths. You could look at the outside of the booth to like see their basic information, make that decision to step your foot in, and then like be able to interact more. And you know, the people in the booths could kind of see, well, who was in their booth, but who was like looking at their booth. And it sort of had, you know, like you could sort of get the crowd effect of people walking around and all. So I don't know if that, you know, helps with some of the, you know, that aspect of a convention. You know, an unpub, you know, is more about a big room filled with rows and rows of tables and people with their heads down, you know, playing games. But
I think
in the exhibit hall. But I thought that could help maybe bring some of the spirit, lost spirit, back in the virtual environment.
Yeah, one of the things we were talking about earlier is with the online systems, you can't really be in two places at once. So either, like with Discord, you're either at a playtest table or you're in the group hall, but at a real unpub, you're at both. So you can be at your table helping people do a game, and you can also say hi to your friend walking by, and you can also see what's happening at the table next to you, and you get this full experience, but at different levels. But with this, if you're in the group channel, everyone is in the group channel at once. It's like you're in a room with 40 people, and everyone is talking to you at the same volume. And it doesn't have that same experience that you would have if you were in a group of 40 people. You would talk to the people next to you, and you would not talk to the people across the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing with this format, just the NunPub in particular, was the, you know, I was torn. You know, we had great speakers, great panels, you know, thanks, Carla, for being, you know, in a couple of this. And you really wanted to, like, make sure the Twitch numbers of people watching it during the panel were as high as possible, you know, kind of reward the people that are taking the time to, you know, share their knowledge or stories or whatever. But they were also happening like during the time when I had my reserved table thing, you know, and I was like, you know, yes, go see Jeff Engelstein. But please come play test me at the same time, you know? So, you know, that I think is just something that the NunPub leadership is going to, you know, it was great to have all that extra content, but to deconflict it against the, you know, part of what unpub in person really is all about. Maybe NunPub in virtual is, you know, does have a different flavor than an unpub in person, because, you know, maybe that kind of, those kind of, you know, dialogues and talks and things like that are, you know, more important. And, you know, because we are getting more and more virtual chances to test our things, you know, with some of these online playtest groups that are coming up in forums. And, you know, I know, Carla, you're doing stuff in your own Discord channel to do that and that, but the virtual playtest group and things like Discord channels and things like that that are popping up, the uniqueness of Unpub as a playtesting venue might be substituted with other means.
Yeah, I think
tossing that out.
Well, I think that same issue exists in the physical Unpub and physical Metatopia. Like Metatopia has even more panels and stuff going on constantly from beginning to end. Like there's no breaks and there's multiple different ones. And same with in-person Unpub is actually three different ones always going on at the same time. So they're competing with each other in addition to the playtesting. But I think the difference for, like, the problem you're bringing up is, like, are people going to go see the talk or are they going to come playtest? Is physical Unpub has thousands of people, most of which are playtesters. This just doesn't.
Right,
it doesn't have those numbers to do both.
Yeah, but at a physical Unpub, they actually deliberately scheduled all the panels and things on the Thursday, Friday. And then
Right. Those are separate.
So they had deliberately deconflicted those before, and now they kind of ran over each other just as they're trying to, you know, learn what it is. So I think there'll be feedback forms and people will, you know, say what they liked and didn't, and they'll continue to refine and do that. The Metatopia, though, of course.
Yeah, Metatopia overlaps.
You would have to mention, though, the just like the the personalized scheduling assistance you get by being part of that event. It was just, I've only been to one, and it was, like, amazing. It was like, Jeff, what do you want to do? And, you know, you will do these things, Jeff, but you get to do all these other things, and I will provide you a three-day schedule. Here it is. Go have fun. That was just a very, very, very fun aspect of that Metatopia experience.
Yeah. Although
anyone listening that wants a fun time, we don't know what Metatopia 2020 will be like.
But, yeah, it might be online.
Probably something also virtual. But
yeah, it's online. That's what Avanel said.
But okay. Well, the other thing, even Metatopia, they're running into the issue of not having enough playtesters, which I didn't go to the last in-person one, but the one before, by Sunday, like, people were heading home, so all those late scheduled games, they were losing all their players and stuff, and it's starting to, there just wasn't that big enough crowd. And I know, Carly, you've actually been asking around about getting more online playtesters for your events. And we need more playtesters, and we have a lot of designers. But when you have a lot of designers and everybody wants to bring their own game, you need more playtesters to fill that up. Like, perfectly happy to play other designers' games. But to play a four-person game, you'll need four people. And if those are four designers, then you're playing four games in an evening, which becomes a very big event for just four people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why I'm really pushing the getting more playtesters, and it's actually been working out really well. Like, just every time I post on, like, Twitter or Facebook, I'll get, like, another playtester. But I'm going to try to do, like, a variety of things to make it, like, more fun for playtesters. And one thing that I heard was that was actually surprising is that playtesters wanted to know that they were, like, that they were helpful, that they were helping out people, and that their feedback was heard. Like, they weren't just playing a game and then it would go nowhere. So if you go into my Discord, I added a channel where it's like playtester feedback incorporated, where all the designers, they can go, like, after they playtest and iterate on their game, they can say, like, exactly who said something that caused a change in their game. Like, they might use even quotes of what the person said, and then how that person, like, interpreted it and fixed or changed something in their game. And hopefully that does a lot of good just to show, like, hey, like, we actually do need you. Like, I think a lot of people, like, they don't understand, like, just how necessary playtesters are.
Yeah.
Like, it was just the other day, like, Bebo, she had playtested Roar and Riot before it became Roar and Riot, and she didn't even know that she had played it before. And I was like, no, really, you played it, and you suggested the animals, and that's how it became Roar and Riot. And she's like, I had no idea whatsoever. And she was posting about how, like, every playtester really counts for designers, and I fully really believe that. But it's that whole, like, line where, okay, like, we get the feedback, we go back to our homes or our computers, we make these changes, we go out and playtest again, and, like, if you're not playtesting at the same event, if you're not making those changes at the same event and talking with the same people, they might think that nothing happened, or they might not hear about it again. So I thought that was a really good idea of having just the channel of, here's all the things that people said or did while playing, and it helped, and this is how.
Yes, I'm trying to get better at tracking about who says stuff in my feedback, so I can kind of have more of a guide. Because I think the way I used to do feedback, even if I had that way to tell people, I wouldn't know what to say, because I don't write down who gave me what tip, you know, and it all kind of disappears into the ether of, this is what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you're
I was going to say, I saw some people using that same technique in some of the NunPub forums too. I don't know if they drew it right from your Discord, but I saw that you had installed that feedback channel there. So I think that's extremely I like kind of the approach you're taking there. I was also just wondering in general, like when you say when you post or something, and you get one playtester to join. What are the things that are bringing them to be the playtesters? You're obviously kind of connecting with something on there. Are there any kind of factors that you're seeing on that, on why they do want to join, and playtest?
So I think it's just really like every time like I tweet or post on Facebook, I'm like, hey, playtesters, you're welcome to join. We really want you to be here. And people are like, oh, yeah, you want our help? And like, I think most people are just naturally like they want to have fun. And if they can have fun and help out at the same time, like that's a win-win. So I just need to like get to the point of like more people actually know this event exists. Well, and that I really care and I welcome them, et cetera. Like, I think a lot of people, like, they're just not, like, welcomed enough or, like told that they might be told that things exist, but they're like, hey, that's not for me. Like, I'm not a designer, so I'm not going to join because I'm not actually wanted or something like that. And that's why I like a lot of these events. Well, just because they're advertised at designers. So if we change it around and advertise at the playtesters, we'll obviously get more playtesters.
That's excellent. You know, Chris and I both collaborate together up at the Game Makers Guild up in the Boston area. So we also, you know how valuable just, you know, regular people that just love to play games, you know, to come in and play with us. So we're always, you know, looking for, you know, techniques to do that, even when we were meeting in person. Excellent. But Carly, you say people that want to have fun. Not all playtesting is fun, right?
It's all fun for a certain person.
I mean, make playtest fun. Like, institute rules that make playtesting fun. Like, one thing that I find that some designers don't do is they let the playtest go on for far too long, okay? Like, that playtest should have been over at the 20-minute mark, but it went on for an hour. Why? Nobody felt comfortable in saying, like, hey, we're doing the same things over and over that we did in the first 3 minutes and nothing has changed and it's obviously broken, but like for some reason we're still doing it. So like just one, training the playtesters to be like, hey, let's stop this. Like, I think like we've all experienced this game, but also training the designers to be like, hey, like I can tell that you aren't like having fun, or I've gotten enough data. Like, I know that there's obvious things to fix. Like, it's that whole idea that designers have to play the game all the way through every time. Like, if you just throw that out, like, just make sure that everyone knows, hey, we do not have to finish this game. If there's like other things going on, or like if it gets to the like super not fun point, like let's talk about it. Let's figure out what you did enjoy, what you didn't enjoy. Like, let's get to feedback, because while feedback might not be fun, it's super helpful, and it gets to that whole like people just want to be heard. And if you let them get to that feedback standpoint where they can tell all their feelings and stuff, like that might not be fun, but it is like it's a really good experience just to have somebody listen to you. So like I make like I have a thing of rules, and the rules are like anyone can stop a playtest. Like, you do not have to be the designer. If you think that the playtest like has gotten to a certain point, it's perfectly fine to leave a playtest at any time. Like, you do not have to stay. Like, make a very comfortable environment where people feel safe. And if players feel safe, then they will be having a lot more fun compared to when they don't feel safe. Like, when they don't feel like they can say the things that they want to say.
Great advice. Are you finding it's harder to read the room in these remote play tests as it was, like, when you were, like, you know, around the table with the group? Or are there any tips there?
So I really like to also have a Google Meet or something going on while I'm playtesting. Like, I just discovered the whole, like, Discord video. But, like, having the Discord video up and being able to see everyone's face while also having the tabletop simulator up, like, it's not the same experience by far. But it is a lot better than not seeing their faces. And it just adds a whole more human aspect to it as well. Like, have a meetup, be able to see people, and, like, it's so much better for your mental health as well. Unless you're one of those people that, like, interact with other humans during the pandemic, which I'm not. So I definitely need that whole, like, seeing people's faces to make my brain work out a little better.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Kyle, you mentioned being able to stop a playtest. We just had a panel talk at Game Makers Guild a little while ago with, actually, Heather was on it, and Who else? Ian Zhang, John Gilmore, and Tony Tran. Was there one more? I'm blanking now. Oh, and Tim Blank. Right. Ha-ha, because he belongs. Anyway. Yeah,
it was Tim Blank, yeah.
One thing they brought up was the importance of ending a playtest when you're done. Like, we got enough information. We don't have to finish this. And that was a big point for them. So. Yeah, it is agreed upon.
Well, it's agreed upon because if you don't stop the playtest when it needs to be stopped, those playtesters will probably never playtest for you again. Yeah. Like, you want playtesters that you make a relationship with, that you can playtest with. Like, well, every week would be great, but even if you get a group that you can play with every month and put, like, every one of your new games in front of, like, that's so much less work. Like, you don't have to keep finding people, just making things easy. And also, like, if you make a relationship with playtesters, you can get really good at, like, reading what kind of games they like and reading their face and, like, knowing when they're confused. Because, like, a large part about playtesting is also just being able to read other humans, because there's a lot of things that, like, when I'm playtesting, I have these thoughts, but that doesn't mean, like, I know what my thoughts are or how my brain is working. For instance, like, there's always this period of time where, like, players go through where they start learning a game, like, learning a new game. And so you can see in their faces, like, oh, okay, they know that they don't know what's going on. And then they go into that stage where they think they know what's going on. And this stage might be, like, a variable amount of time until they get to the place where they actually know what's going on. Like, what made that person incorrectly go from knowing they didn't know to thinking that they knew? And you need to get rid of all those things that do the false positive, and also really emphasize the thing that whatever it was that made them go from, like, incorrectly thinking that they know to actually knowing. So, like, if you can do all these things and make your prototype super intuitive, that's fantastic, but it's really hard to do if, like, you've never met a person before and you don't quite know that they're, like, facial patterns and stuff. Like, some people are very expressive, but, like, for me, if I'm playtesting, you might think that I hate your game based on my mannerisms, but, like, if you think I hate your game, I probably really love it just because, like, my face doesn't move like other people's faces do. It's been a thing my entire life. I acknowledge it. I live with it. But, like, I tell people sometimes, like, when I start playtesting, like if I ever start, like, trash talking during a game, that means I like it. And I'll have to be, like, I'll be trash talking and then I'll notice it and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I said the F-bomb a lot. That means I love this. That means I'm really getting passionate about it. Like, you might think that I hate it, but, like, when I say that I super hate this, what I mean is I really enjoy that a game is giving me emotions.
It means you're so invested that you forgot to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, like, if you make a game like that, like, I don't want you to feel bad. So that's why, like, even all of us as playtesters, if you can, like, figure out yourself like that and figure out, like, when people misinterpret your face, unless you just got a very expressive face that says exactly what your emotions actually are, in which case I very much envy you. Like, just being this super helpful playtester about that, like, oh, yeah, like, I might make you think, like, bad thoughts about this game, but actually it's super good. Everything is fine. But if I never say any words, I probably really hate it, and I can't think of nice things to say.
Chris, I'll let you do the welcome, but speaking of super helpful playtester, I don't think I can think of anyone more helpful than Andrea.
Andrea, welcome. You made it.
Hello. I did make it. I'm still winded.
Well, you didn't have to rush to get here. We've only been recording for 90 minutes.
I was halfway up a mountain.
That's dedication. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you were just a playtester at NunPub this year?
Yes.
And how was that process for you?
I started out not that interested in going and showed up because a friend convinced me to, and I ended up playing games for about 14 hours yesterday.
So it went well?
Yeah, I would say that. I discovered a few pretty cool ones.
So we've had designers and panelists and people involved with NunPub. You're the first one that was just as a playtester. So did you find it was easy to find games, or how was that process from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like there were not as many playtesters as there could have been, so there was pretty much always a game looking for people, and most of them had low enough player count that if one or two people show up in the lobby, they're like, all right, let's start.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of people were looking for playtesters. That's what Jeff was talking about earlier.
Yeah, so as long as you were like open-minded about what games you were willing to playtest, there was always something to join.
And was it easy enough to, like, once you picked a game, just joining the voice channel and getting on TTS and basically worked like any smaller events you've done?
Almost always pretty easy. A few times the designers were pretty new to TTS, so it was a little bit of like showing them how to run their own game and then starting. They'd be like, how do I shuffle this deck?
Yeah, Ryan was on before you showed up, and he said that he learned that the R button lets you shuffle now, and you can learn all sorts of new stuff.
I learned some cool things too, like how I already knew how to pick up multiple items at a time, but now I learned how to drop those items one at a time.
Oh, wow. Does that also need a real mouse and not a trackpad?
Yes.
Someday I'll buy a mouse.
Carla, and Andrea led a session for the whole GMG. We did a Zoom session and kind of walked us all through a tabletop simulator tutorial way back in April as we were all trying to figure out what it was. And it was just so super helpful. And I've sent that link to so many people to just say, you know, watch 15 seconds of this, pause, do that thing, then watch 15 more seconds, do that thing, and your game will suddenly be in TTS. So she was a great resource for us, and you really should, if you two haven't met, Carla, don't steal her from us, but we'll let you borrow her.
Yeah, I mean, I always love playtesters. We were talking earlier about how I am doing a variety of things to try to entice more playtesters to come to my Discord. And I didn't even mention, like, I'm trying to implement, like, rankings and stuff. Like, the more you play test, the more points you get, because like if you like games, you might like gamification, so why not?
Oh, no. You're gonna trap me. I can't even tell you how many people over the past week have told me I need to meet you.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, here you are. The Board Game Workshop provides.
Well, hopefully I can find like your name and stuff. I don't know. Like, I've never done this whole, like, voice Discord thing, so I don't know how to see it. Oh, okay, I figured it out. I'm, like, very new to Discord in general. I started Discord by starting my own server, which is probably not the way you should do it, but, like, that's what I did. So I've learned a lot of things in weird ways.
And you put that RPG on there, and now I'm trapped, so.
Yeah, you're trapped forever. There's I said a variety of ways to entice people. And like, what I mean is like, we have the channel for the feedback to get those people that are like, oh yeah, I'm being helpful and I know it because there's this giant list. And then the gamification thing for the people that like just need the levels and stuff. And also I want to do like raffles and things like that. But then there's this like, it's called Epic RPG, where you can do things like type in like RPG chop, and it's like, oh, you got 2 wood, and like you do this repeatedly and you get all this wood, and you can create like an epic log out of like several wooden logs. And like, if you are one of those people that like stupid text-based things that are kind of funny, I can get you that way. Like, now Chris is in there every day because we have to do an arena together to get the cookies.
Yes,
we have to get the cookies.
And yesterday, but I killed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't know why.
Carla, I was curious about this Discord community that you're building. Would you have been able to do it if the pandemic hadn't, you know, like taken away you traveling to conventions and all that stuff? I'm just curious about that. Would this have happened because it's something you always thought should be there, or is it just sort of this pleasant side effect of 2020 that we shouldn't have?
I would say definitely not. I did not do this because I like it. I did it because I had no other choice, really. Well, like, for me, like, no other choice is, like, I want to reach out to people. I want to, like, interact. I want to be a community. And how I was doing that before is I was going to, I don't know, on average, 2 to 4 conventions a month. And I was traveling about and staying at people's houses and playing games all the time and, like, I got all that social connection, and it was super fun, but also, like, super productive because I got to see all these games and learn all these things and improve on my gameplay and stuff. And then the pandemic hit and it was like, oh, I can't leave my house. How am I going to have that same experience where I get to meet people and like just get inspired by things and like talk about game design? Because like, I don't know, one of the things that like I really love about game design is like you can talk about it with like other people and you get all these ideas by just, you know, talking about it. Like I learned so much just because I do like a game design live chat every Sunday at 2 p.m. And like we just talk about a topic and afterwards I'm like, whoa, I need to design, you know, whatever kind of game that we just talked about. Like we've talked about puzzle games, or this week was a campaign game, and I get like super motivated until my brain is also like, Carla, hold up, you don't need another game design in progress. Let's just try to incorporate these things you learned in a more realistic fashion.
It's always room and for I do one that more.
Yeah. Well, so you say that, but you did not see me like last year where I literally had a luggage full of games, like a luggage that I carried around, just like with 30 or so games in it, which was like
digital. You got plenty of space.
Oh gosh. Like, no, my designing has completely changed. Cause like carrying around 30 games and just going to a lot of conventions, I could sit down and I could like ask like 3 or 4 questions and be like, oh, okay, you're the perfect playtester for this game. Let's play it. And then I would get like the feedback from the perfect playtester. But now like I don't want to put 30 games into Tabletop Simulator. So I'm more like only working on like 2 or 3 at the same time. It's been a learning experience, but I guess that's life.
I guess that's reasonable. I think I only have two. Yeah. And one isn't very good. And one has been made so many times. I'm sick of it.
It's not good yet.
Kathleen Mercury had thrown a term out to me. She said, I'm not a suitcase designer. And what does that mean? And she was describing you at that moment, Carla, I think, with the suitcase filled with prototypes, carrying it around. She said she would never be that. I said I would never be that. But now I have all these games that have just backed up that don't have homes. So,
see? It happens to all of us.
Yes. Well, yeah. Anyway.
I'm safe so far.
You're going to have a suitcase filled of Jay's games, Andrea.
No. I'm moving up in the world. I'm going to start working on other people's.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you for having this little session. I was happy to drop in and chat with everybody.
Yeah, Jeff, you want to give any contact info or projects before you head out?
Well, shucks, Jeff Johnson, I have most of my fun up with the Game Makers Guild in Boston, the greater area. So if you're in that area, come hang out with us and share your games. And I like to say we play our terrible games until they get better. So do that. Otherwise I focus on, usually family friendly, usually I say I have an 8-year-old and family in mind, and I'm trying to make a game that you wouldn't mind playing with your niece or nephew. So I just keep, playing in that space. And then, sometimes I'll take a core that I've discovered there and just kind of add a few more things to it and a different theme and, make it for a little older crowd. So I'm just, shopping around a couple projects and, I keep my expectations low and I just take the fun in when I can, even though the publisher said no, at least they looked at the prototype. Yay, victory for me. So, I just kind of live in that space right now and just keep trying to reach out and, help whoever I can, with the connections or opportunities or things like that. So that's just what Jeff's up to. And enjoy collaborating with all of you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Have a great weekend.
So back to trying to get people to join a Discord. I've been trying to get people to join my Discord so that they'll start judging games for the contest. But it's a very slow trickle. And I don't want to add an RPG because then I'll have to do 2 RPGs.
Well, it's the same one.
Does it count?
Yeah.
Oh.
But
I'd still have to go in both groups to manage it. Or I could just leave your Discord, but that doesn't seem fun.
Yeah, don't. We have a thing. I got you a horse breeding partner. Like, it's fine. You want to join our big arenas? Like, just
that's a really weird phrase out of context.
Yeah, like, so one thing about this game is, like, I keep wanting to, like, not sound really lewd when I talk about horse breeding, but I'll be like, hey, David and Charlie, you should breed now. It's your time. And then I'm like, oh, that, no. But do the horse breeding command, please, because I want to get a tier 6 horse, and I can only do that if somebody else gets tier 5. So I'm not trying to sound lewd, but, you know, some days it just, that's what happens.
It's part of the process. That's how horses work.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, I think I'm going to try the whole raffle thing. It was actually suggested by a couple people to get a Patreon. So, like, if I get the Patreon and people that have, like, extra money, I guess, just give me money to do more raffles and get more playtesters, I feel like it'll just be a thing that continues to happen. Like, I don't know, more people will be like, oh, yeah, there's lots of playtesters, and I want more playtesters. So then they get more money for the raffle, and the raffle gets bigger, and people join for that reason. Or I get more people hooked on the Epic RPG or the feedback channel or whatever. Like, I never do, like, just one thing, because, like, doing one thing could fail. But if I try, like, 5 different things, the chances of all of them failing is, like, much less. Like, well, especially if each thing is, like, working just a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, if each thing just brings in a small amount of people, then all the things will bring in, you know, a larger amount of people, probably.
That's the hope. But with the benefit of having people pay for Patreon, besides the money, which obviously helps in various ways, but people become more committed to something they've invested money in. So I'm paying for your Patreon. I should also show up and interact. And that can just help build that group. And then once you have a critical mass of people, then it can start to grow itself. Like you said, once you have enough playtesters, the designers go there because, like, oh, this is where all the playtesters are. And then there's a lot of games to play, so you get more playtesters, and it grows. But it's very hard to get to that point.
I mean, we'll see what happens by the time the pandemic is over.
So, I'm so curious to see how many of these, like, Discord communities and everything will continue after.
I think some will. I'm overloaded with Discord communities, but most of them are from before the pandemic, and I haven't looked at them since. So I'm only really active in my own because I have to be, GMG because it's a small group of people I know, and now Weird Raptor because of the RPG mostly. I used to be in the Button Shy one a lot, but the Button Shy Discord is so massive now, with a different channel for every game they have, plus every project. So, I don't know, they're up to 60, 70 channels. It's nearly impossible to track it all, so I'll hop in and talk about my games every once in a while, but it's become too big for me to track.
Yeah, there are so many that I can't keep up with all of them at once, and I can't find any reason that anyone stands out enough that I should dedicate my attention to it, so that I just end up checking none of them.
Yeah, that is the problem. So, well, Carly, you got to make yours so good that there's no reason to go to the others.
Yes.
And horse breeding might be that.
I've already started. Like, I've messaged Andrea, and I started talking with her, and, like, maybe it'll be the personal touch. It'll be like, oh, yeah, since Carly reached out herself and was chatting to me, maybe I'll stay in her Discord or something. But also, like, I do like to make friends, so I feel like that actually is one of the, like, differences than other people, like, where I get, like, real excited, like, when I see, like, oh, yeah, a lady joined my Discord. I love board game ladies. I am going to reach out and make a friend right now. And because, like, I'm so enthusiastic, then maybe people are like, oh, yeah, this is a welcoming place or something. I don't know. I'm just on this end of it being excited that people are in my Discord.
Yeah, I currently play in remote playtesting the most because it was the first one I joined, so then I, like, made a bunch of friends there, and now I'm like, well, I know people here, and now that they're in all the other Discords too, there's people everywhere, so I guess it's cool.
There is a lot of overlap.
There is now.
So, Andrea, as a dedicated playtester, what are some things you would like to see in, like, the thing Carla's setting up? because most of the people I talk to are designers and playtesters, so they view it from at least a semi-selfish standpoint of how do I get people to my game. But if you're just going to help other people, what are the things that get you to do that?
Definitely a community. I like playing the same games over and over again and seeing them evolve. So having like the same people come back over and over helps with that. And then I'm also very interested in some of the workshops outside of the actual designing of games. Like I saw that you've been doing some of the like pitch and sell sheet workshops, which I actually helped run one of each of those in our local group. So those things are really cool just because the act of the designers thinking about something besides just what changes do I want to make to the game helps then elevate the games that we're playing.
That's really interesting. I never thought that like players would want to play the same games over and over again and see the changes.
I enjoy that. I like seeing them get better, be like, oh, I really enjoyed this game a month ago, but it broke near the end or whatever, and here's how they solved that.
Well, I think it ties into what you were saying. You got feedback from earlier, people wanting to see that their feedback was worthwhile. And if they're playing the same game, that's one of the things that can show that to them.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. And also you said that you liked seeing like the other stuff that goes into it. Like, do you actually like, do you just like seeing that it happens, or do you like watching and participating and like hearing things about game design, even if you have like no want of actually doing it?
I mean, I think everything I can learn about game design will ultimately improve the quality of feedback that I can give to games. Even if I'm not designing a game myself, knowing what things to look for, being able to offer the right suggestions for maybe something is missing in this part of the game, what might be able to fix that? And just the more I know about the design side of it, the better advice I can then offer as a playtester.
I mean, it makes a ton of sense, and I never, like, knew, like, well, I haven't known like other like dedicated playtesters, well, other than like people that are just my friends that are like, oh yeah, I like hanging out, and also you always bring around your games, so I guess this is happening. I don't know,
like, odd one out. When I first started, everyone told me within a year I'd be designing a game. I've been doing it for a year and a half now. I still haven't. I actually attended Tim's Lightning game design event yesterday with the thought of like, sure, maybe I'll try it. Like the way Tim talks, he just convinces me that I could totally do this too. I could design a game. And then every now and then I try and I just realize, no, it's not that I can't do it. It's that I don't want to do it.
I mean, it is a lot of work for like nobody gets paid what they should. So like, try to imagine like the hourly pay you made on your last game, Chris, like is it pennies?
If I don't minus all of the materials and effort, it is positive. But yeah. I don't even think it's pennies if you go hourly.
Yeah, it's so sad. Like, well, because like we work on these games for like years. Like every game, like I'm bringing a Kickstarter. I'm like, oh yeah, I've been carrying this around in my backpack for 2 years. Like even thinking about like all the effort of carrying it. Like if I got paid for that, it'd be like, I don't know, not even a full cent.
You get paid in the muscle you gain from carrying that backpack.
Yes, there you go. That is the thing. Well, and then I got a rolly luggage because I couldn't carry around the backpack anymore.
Well, you're losing your gains.
Yes, I don't know. But my back will probably be better for it. So I don't know. Getting old is really sad.
It is. It is indeed. But Andrea, even though you don't want to be a designer, from what I've seen with all your work on, well, everyone's games that you're working with, it seems like you're moving into a developer job, essentially. Whether or not you ever get paid for it is a different question.
Yeah, from what I can tell, it's very hard to get into doing as paid work if you weren't a designer first, but most of my friends in the community at this point refer to me as a developer. I'm interested in pretty much all of the later stages of design, so the development of mostly done games, balancing to make them work, tweaking things to make them more fun, as well as the writing of rule books, the finding of publishers that might be interested in that game type. Anything that happens like after that hump of creating something fun.
Which I think is a really important space to fill, because as a designer and other designers talk about this, they hate that part of it. The first 90% is great. That's the exciting new stuff. All the rest is work. But if you enjoy that part, that's That's why you got to bring people together for a community.
That's how I got into it. I found too many friends who had a bunch of mostly done designs sitting on a shelf that they just weren't touching anymore because they didn't want to bother with the next steps.
Those are tough steps.
I mean, and any momentum you get is like, oh yeah, it actually is easy and I've spent all this time and maybe I should finish it.
Yeah. At one point, a friend was frustrating me because he kept trying to teach his game without having a rule book, and he'd teach it in weird orders, he'd miss steps, he'd teach stuff from previous versions. And I'd played it so many times, I just went home, I created a rule book and sent it to him. I was like, here, use it if you want.
I mean, that in itself is just amazing. Like, if I didn't have to create another rule book, like, that would be my life.
That's all for this episode. Financial support for the Board Game Workshop is provided by our annual game design contest and our Patreon supporters. Special thanks to our inventor-level supporters, Boss Cottis, Roscoe Shock, Brad Batchelor, and Chris Turner. If you would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/theboardgameworkshop. You can contact the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Go to theboardgameworkshop.com for links, past episodes, and information about our design contest and other events. Thanks for listening!